Chapter 3. And petitions from the owls of mighty worth suspended there. It was as if these men and boys had suddenly dived into past ages, and fetched therefrom an hour and deed which had before been familiar with this spot. The ashes of the original British pyre which blazed from that summit lay fresh, and undisturbed in the barrow beneath their tread. The flames from funeral piles long ago kindled there had shone down upon the lowlands as these were shining now. Festival fires to Thor and Woden had followed on the same ground and duly had their day. Indeed, it is pretty well known that such blazes as this the Heathmen were now enjoying are rather the lineal descendants from jumbled druidical rites and Saxon ceremonies than the invention of popular feeling about gunpowder plot. Moreover, to light a fire is the instinctive and resistant act of man when, at the winter ingress, the curfew is sounded throughout nature. It indicates a spontaneous, Promethean rebelliousness against that fiat, that this recurrent season shall bring foul times, cold darkness, misery and death. Black chaos comes, and the fettered gods of the earth say, "Let there be light." The brilliant lights and sooty shades which struggled upon the skin and clothes of the person standing round caused their lineaments and general contours to be drawn with duresque vigor and dash. Yet the permanent moral expression of each face it was impossible to discover, for as the nimble flames towered, nodded, and swooped through the surrounding air, the blots of shade and flakes of light upon the countenances of the group changed shape and position endlessly. All was unstable, quivering as leaves, evanescent as lightning. Shadowy eye sockets, deep as those of a death's head, suddenly turned into pits of luster. A lantern jaw was cavernous, then it was shining, wrinkles were emphasized to ravines, or obliterated entirely by a changed ray. Nostrils were dark wells, sinews in old necks were gilt moldings, things with no particular polish on them were glazed. Bright objects, such as the tip of a fur's hook one of the men carried, were as glass, eyeballs glowed like little lanterns. Those whom nature had depicted as merely quaint became grotesque, the grotesque became preternatural, for all was in extremity. Hence it may be that the face of an old man, who had like others been called to the heights by the rising flames, was not really the mere nose and chin that it appeared to be, but an appreciable quantity of human countenance. He stood complacently sunning himself in the heat. With a speaker, or stake, he tossed the outlying scraps of fuel into the conflagration, looking at the midst of the pile, occasionally lifting his eyes, to measure the height of the flame, or to follow the great sparks which rose with it, and sailed away into darkness. The beaming sight, and the penetrating warmth, seemed to breed in him a cumulative cheerfulness, which soon amounted to delight. With his stick in his hand he began to jig a private minuet, a bunch of copper seals shining and swinging like a pendulum from under his waistcoat. He also began to sing, in the voice of a bee up a flue, "He King called down his noblesse all, by one, by two, by three, Earl Marshal, I'll go shrive the queen, and thou shalt wend with me." "Boon, a boon," quoth Earl Marshal, and fell on his bended knee, "that whatsoever the queen shall say, no harm thereof may be." Want of breath prevented a continuance of the song, and the breakdown attracted the attention of a firm-standing man of middle age, who kept each corner of his crescent-shaped mouth rigorously drawn back into his cheek, as if to do away with any suspicion of mirthfulness which might erroneously have attached to him. "A fair stave, grant for cantle, but I am afeard 'tis too much for the mouldy weasand of such a old man as you," he said to the wrinkled reveller. "Ost wish th was 3/6 again, grantfer, as you was when you first learned to sing it?" "Hey?" said grantfer cantle, stopping in his dance. "Dost wish was young again, I say? There's a hole in thy poor bellows nowadays seemingly. But there's good art in me. If I couldn't make a little wind go a long ways I should seem no younger than the most aged man, should I, Timothy? And how about the new married folks down there at the Quiet Woman Inn?" the other inquired, pointing to pointing towards a dim light in the direction of the distant highway, but considerably apart from where the Rattleman was at that moment resting. That's the rights of the matter about him. You ought to know, being an understanding man. But a little rakish, hey? I own to it. Master Cantle is that, or he's nothing. Yet is a gay fault, neighbor Fairway, that age will cure. I heard that they were coming home tonight. By this time they must have come. What besides? The next thing is for us to go and wish them joy, I suppose? Well, no. No? Now, I thought we must. I must, or 'twould be very unlike me the first in every spree that's going. Oh, thou put on a friar's coat, and I'll put on a no sir, and we will to Queen Leonor go, like friar and his brother. I met Miss S.E.A. Bright, the young bride's aunt, last night, and she told me that her son Clem was coming home a Christmas. Wonderful clever, I believe ah, I should like to have all that's under that young man's hair. Well, then, I spoke to her in my well-known merry way, and she said, oh, that what's shaped so venerable should talk like a fool. ... that's what she said to me. I don't care for her, be jowned if I do, and so I told her. Be jowned if I care for E, ... I said. I had her there, eh? I rather think yes he had you, said Fairway. No, said Grandfer Cantle, his countenance slightly flagging. Tisn't so bad as that with me? Seemingly tis, however, is it because of the wedding that Clem is coming home a Christmas to make a new arrangement, because his mother is now left in the house alone? Yes, yes, that's it. But, Timothy, hearken to me, said the Grandfer earnestly. Hawk known as such a joker, I be an understanding man, if you catch me serious, and I am serious now. I can tell ye lots about the married couple. Yes, this morning at 6 o'clock they went up the country to do the job, and neither Vell nor Mark have been seen of them since, though I reckon that this afternoon has brought them home again man and woman wife, that is. Isn't it spoke like a man, Timothy, and wasn't Miss S.E.A. Bright wrong about me? Yes, it will do. I didn't know the two had walked together since last fall, when her aunt forbid the banns. How long has this new set to been in mangling then? Do you know, Humphrey? Yes, how long? Said Grandfer Cantle smartly, likewise turning to Humphrey. Ask that question. Ever since her aunt altered her mind, and said she might have the man after all, replied Humphrey, without removing his eyes from the fire. He was a somewhat solemn young fellow, and carried the hook and leather gloves of a furze cutter, his legs, by reason of that occupation, being sheathed in bulging leggings as stiff as the Philistines' greaves of brass. That's why they went away to be married, I count. You see, after kicking up such a nunny watch, and forbidding the banns, 'twould have made Miss S.E.A. Bright seem foolish-like to have a banging wedding in the same parish all, as if she'd never gainsaid it. Exactly seem foolish-like, and that's very bad for the poor things that be so, though I only guess as much, to be sure, said Grandfer Cantle, still strenuously preserving a sensible bearing and mien. Ah, well, I was at church that day, said Fairway, which was a very curious thing to happen. If 'twasn't my name simple, said the Grandfer emphatically. Can't been there 2 year, and now the winter is a coming on I won't say I shall. I han't been these 3 years, said Humphrey, for I'm so dead sleepy of a Sunday, and 'tis so terrible far to get there, and when you do get there 'tis such a mortal poor chance that you'll be chose for up above, when so many bain't, that I bide at home, and don't go at all. I not only happen to be there, said Fairway, with a fresh collection of emphasis, but I was sitting in the same pew as Miss S.E.A. Bright. And though you may not see it as such, it fairly made my blood run cold to hear her. Yes, it is a curious thing, but it made my blood run cold, for I was close at her elbow. The speaker looked round upon the bystanders, now drawing closer to hear him, with his lips gathered tighter than ever in the rigorousness of his descriptive moderation. 'Tis a serious job, to have things happen to either, said a woman behind. Ye are to declare it. Apostrophe was the parson's words. Fairway continued. And ye then upstood a woman at my side a touching of me. Well, be damned if there isn't Miss S.E. Obright a standing up. Apostrophe I said to myself. Yes, neighbors, though I was in the temple of prayer, that's what I said. 'Tis against my conscience to curse and swear in company, and I hope any woman here will overlook it. Still, what I did say, and 'twould be a lie if I didn't own it. So 'twould, neighbor Fairway. Be damned if there isn't Miss S.E. Obright a standing up, apostrophe I said, the narrator repeated, giving out the bad word with the same passionless severity of face as before, which proved how entirely necessity, and not gusto, had to do with the iteration. And the next thing I heard was, I forbid the banns, apostrophe from her. I'll speak to you after the service, apostrophe said the parson, in quite a homely way, yes, turning all at once into a common man no holier than you were one. Ah, her face was pale. Maybe you can call to mind that monument in Weatherbury Church, the cross-legged soldier, that have had his arm knocked away by the school children? Well, he would about have matched that woman's face, when she said, I forbid the banns. Apostrophe, the audience cleared their throats, and tossed a few stalks into the fire, not because these deeds were urgent, but to give themselves time to weigh the moral of the story. I'm sure when I heard they'd been forbid I felt as glad as if anybody had jibed me sixpence, said an earnest voice, that of Ollie Dowden, a woman who lived by making heath brooms, or besoms. Her nature was to be civil to enemies as well as to friends, and grateful to all the world for letting her remain alive. And now the maid have married him just the same, said Humphrey. After that Miss S.E. Obright came round, and was quite agreeable, Fairway resumed, with an unheeding air, to show that his words were no appendage to Humphrey's, but the result of independent reflection. Supposing they were ashamed, I don't see why they shouldn't have done it here right, said a widespread woman whose stays creaked like shoes, whenever she stooped or turned. 'Tis well to call the neighbors together, and to pay a good racket once now and then, and it may as well be when there's a wedding, as at tide times. I don't care for close ways. Ah, now, you'd hardly believe it, but I don't care for gay weddings, said Timothy Fairway, his eyes again traveling round. Hardly blame Thomas and E. Obright and neighbor Wilda for doing it quiet, if I must own it. A wedding at home means 5 and 6-handed reels by the hour, and they do a man's legs no good when he's over 40. True. Once at the woman's house you can hardly say nay to being one in a jig, knowing all the time that you be expected to make yourself worth your victuals. You be bound to dance at Christmas, because 'tis the time o' year. You must dance at weddings, because 'tis the time o' life. At christenings folk will even smuggle in a reel or two, if 'tis no further on than the first or second cheel. And this is not naming the songs you've got to sing. For my part I like a good hearty funeral as well as anything. You've as splendid victuals and drink, as at other parties, and even better. And it don't wear your legs to stumps, and talking over a poor fellow's ways as it do to stand up in hornpipes. 9 folks out of 10 would own 'twas going too far to dance then, I suppose, suggested Granfer Cantle. 'Tis the only sort of party a staid man can feel safe at after the mug have been round a few times. Well, I can't understand a quiet lady like little body like Tamsin E. Obright caring to be married in such a mean way, said Susan Nunsich, the white woman, who preferred the original subject. 'Tis worse than the poorest do. And I shouldn't have cared about the man, though some may say he's good looking. To give him his due, he's a clever, learned fellow in his way, amist as clever as Clem E. Obright used to be. He was brought up to better things than keeping the quiet woman. An engineer, that's what the man was, as we know, but he threw away his chance, and so it took a public house to live. His learning was no use to him. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.